Welcome Karen as she tells her story.
So, hi everyone. Is this, there we go. I'm actually not as interesting as that makes me seem, I don't think. Maybe I am. I don't know. We'll find out. So, it was, a couple years ago that Mark first said, I need you to do this talk at some point. And I kept saying, no, there's plenty of other people who have far more, far better things to talk about. And then my life just kept getting more complicated. And he kept saying, when are you going to give a Theology on Tap talk? And finally, here we are. So the title of my talk, Full Communion, Consecration and Cancer, How God Has Wooed Me. And really, this whole talk is a romance. So we're going to start with some flowers when I talk about the background that I don't really have pictures for. So I was born and raised Lutheran, Missouri Synod Lutheran to be specific. I was born into a family where church and God was an important part of our lives. My mom actually baptized me when I was just a couple of days old because I was a tiny, tiny little baby in the NICU, and she didn't want to take any chances, and she stepped up and baptized me. And I'm very thankful for her. I'm very thankful that that's the home I was born into, where that was the priority. We went to church every Sunday, if not more often. I went to Lutheran schools up through eighth grade. I was involved with my high school youth group. When I went to college, I was involved with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which some of you may be aware of. It's kind of a Protestant equivalent of Focus. A lot of similarities between the two groups. I was a small group leader. I was within leadership within that on my campus. And everything was going well. And I had a friendship with God. Things were going well. And then one day, and it really was one day, it was a Thursday, one day I very suddenly experienced spiritual darkness. I very suddenly felt abandoned, rejected, unloved by God. And I wasn't sure what I had done wrong. And I had no idea what to do about this. And I prayed, and I talked to my pastor, and I talked to many, many other people. And no one really had any words to help me. No one really had any way to help me out with this. No one had answers for me, except, well, clearly you're not trying hard enough, which wasn't helpful, because I was. And this went on for about a year and a half. And for about a year and a half, I continued to pray. I continued to cry out to God. I continued to beg him, please, I'm your child. I want to be. And I heard nothing but silence, a deafening sort of silence, not just an absence, but it almost felt intentional. During this time, I was dating a fantastic man. And he was saving for a ring at the time. But this tore us apart, and we just couldn't keep going together. And we broke up. And the night that that happened, the night that he and I broke up, I prayed. And I got down on my knees and I said, God, I want to be right with you. Clearly, I'm not right now. I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong. But clearly, I am not in a right place with you right now. I just broke up with the man of my dreams. I've seen so many of my friends who, when that happened, when they broke up with someone just really great, they went on this horrible rebound relationship. And I said, God, I beg of you, I don't want that. Clearly, I am not capable right now of a relationship with both you and a man. I've got neither at the moment, and I choose you first over a relationship with a man. I said, God, please protect me from any romantic interest with anyone until I am right with you again. He was actually quite faithful with that. I have been protected. Here we are today. So eventually, after about 18 months of feeling abandoned, I finally said, you know what? I am so exhausted. I need to stop. I need to stop this fight. I need to stop. I just need to stop. I need a break. I need to walk away. And many of my friends were very upset, were very distraught. Oh my goodness, you're going to be an atheist. No, no, I am not going to be an atheist. The prodigal son did not doubt the existence of his father. He just didn't want to be there. It doesn't mean he didn't believe that his father was his father. He just didn't want to be there. And I said, I just need a break. It's going to be a year. I put it in your calendar. It's going to be a year. I just need to walk away. And I did. And a year turned to 2, turned to 5, turned to 15. But I knew the whole time, the whole 15 years, I absolutely knew without any doubt, this was a temporary situation. I was not going to be away from God for the rest of my life. I had no idea how I was going to come back, and I was pretty sure I wasn't going to make the first move. But I knew that this was going to be a temporary situation, and that one day I would return. I would come back, because I knew that that's who I was. A child of God is absolutely who I was. Right in the middle of this time was the death of Pope John Paul. And I remember being very, very moved. I recorded the funeral. I still have the VHS tape of the recording of the funeral. It felt wrong to record over it again, and I couldn't explain why. But that, for me, was a very, very important moment because I watched all of these people, and I was so moved by their faith. I was so moved by what I saw. And, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I had no idea at the time that I would be Catholic one day. But I really saw that as kind of an opening of the door, a chink in the armor, or whatever we want to call it. I really saw that as a step in that direction, kind of my first step towards becoming Catholic. Old St. Raphael's Church, I had to walk, if I wanted to go to the farmer's market, I had to walk past it from where my apartment had been. And I was just always intrigued by it. I never went in, but I had two ways to go, and I always chose to go the way that had me walk past it, and I never knew why. But I continued for this 15-year period of saying no. Every now and then I'd have this little, you should come back, come back. And I said, no, 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 not yet. Not ready. No. September 1st, 2009, as Mark said, I'm a teacher. My whole world is scheduled by the school year. So September 1st, 2009, I had no idea that that was the year that I was going to return to God. Didn't know it was going to be through the Catholic Church. And basically what I can say is we talk about the magnitude of God's patience. I can tell you where the end of it is, because I made it there. I made it to the end of God's patience. He was done waiting. And as I said, the Holy Spirit went into overdrive. And over the course of a day or two, this vague sense that someday I should return to God became my dominant thought. It was the first thought I had when I woke up in the morning. It was the last thought I had when I went to sleep. I dreamt about it. After a couple of days, I was struggling to hold conversations with people because this was nagging at me so much. I was distracted so much by, you need to come back, you need to come back, you need to come back. And I could picture St. Patrick's Church. I live less than a block from it, so I'd seen it many times, but I can't explain it, but I knew, more certainly than I knew anything else, that that is where I need to go. I had to walk up to it to go find out its name so I could Google it, and I didn't know. So I was driving home from wherever I'd been on a Saturday, right about 6 o'clock, just as the evening mass was letting out. And Monsignor was standing out on the sidewalk. And I had seen his picture online already. And he was standing there. Now, he's 6 foot something in big vestments. You don't miss him. But what I said, you know, I'm just going to drive past. And what I noticed is that people were gathered around him. And just as I got there, someone must have said something funny. And he just laughed. And for me, that was hugely comforting because I'm like, okay, this is not some cranky old man. He's actually nice. He's actually nice. Okay, this could help. This could help. Wow. So, September 14th. Remember, it was September 1st. I still didn't know. September 14th. The Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. Little did I know. I was Protestant. Little did I know. I was so distracted. I have to return to God. 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 This was the Monday right after the Saturday. And I finally said, okay, fine, God, fine. I will email the priest. I will email him tonight. Just back off. Give me some space. And all of a sudden, I went calm. At which point, I decided to do something that I don't recommend. I decided to try and outsmart God. Don't do it. I thought to myself, you know, I have an obligation to my students to grade these papers. I'll bet he gets up early to pray. I'll bet he's an early to bed, early to rise kind of person. And if I grade these papers first and then email him late tonight, he'll already be in bed and I'm basically going to buy myself a day. And maybe I'm going to end up at the bottom of his inbox. Maybe I'll buy myself some more time. So I finished grading my papers and I sent off my email. Now, I made a fatal error. If this was truly my plan, I believe in subject lines that mean something. I hate when people, when I'm looking for an email and it's just this subject line, like, subject line should mean something. My subject line was return to God, ? That one's not going to get lost in the bottom of his inbox. It's just not. And I introduced myself to him. I said, I'm looking for some help. About 15 years ago, God and I had an argument, and I've run from him ever since. For some time now, I know that I've known that I need to return, and for some reason, I'm feeling drawn to your church. And then in little parentheses, and I would have made the font smaller, but it just wasn't quite worth it. I was raised Lutheran. I wasn't sure if that was a problem or not. I said, I don't know how to return to God. I don't know how to face him after all of this time. The parable of the prodigal son comes to mind, but I certainly understand his trepidation as he approached his house. Thoughts? Signed it. Hit send. Figured, okay. I've done what I promised I would do. I have lived up to my promise. Went, brushed my teeth, got in my pajamas, fed the cats. Came back to shut down the computer. He's not an early to bed person, in case anyone didn't know. At first, I thought that the email must have bounced, because it was back in my inbox so quickly. No, he just was sitting on his computer, apparently, when it came in. And I looked, I said, no, God, you cheated. I waited until 11 o'clock at night to send this email. I sent it today, as I said, but I sent it now because I wanted to buy a day. I'm taking my day. Shut the computer down. Unplugged it from the wall. Yes, I did. I didn't shut down the router because that was just, that's way too much effort. Went to bed, slept just fine, thank you. But when the alarm went off in the morning, I beelined for that computer. And the email, the response back was, "Hi, Karen. I was very glad to hear from you. I wonder if you'd be interested in coming and talking with me sometime. If you think about the story of the prodigal son, he certainly may have felt very sheepish as he approached the house. But remember, in the end, there was nothing to fear." A couple days later, we sat down and talked. It was the next day. We sat down and talked for an hour and a half. He invited me to Mass. And the next Sunday, I came to Mass. Bishop Morlino was there that day. Something he used to do is he would bless with holy water every Sunday that he was there. He had his super soaker. This actually predated his true super soaker. He had this like big, like it was a whole sheep kind of puffball. But this was a little smaller than that. But I'm at my first Mass. And first time going to church when I couldn't get out of it easily in a very long time. 15 years, about two-thirds of the way back on the center aisle, everybody is singing something along the lines of, "Remember your baptism, remember your baptism." Bishop Morlino gets to me. He stops, stands there looking right at me. People continue to sing. Looks me up and down. Dips in, bam. And my thought was, yes, I did need to be reminded of my baptism. I did. So I started coming to Mass every Sunday. I went to Catholicism 101 for 3 weeks. And, about 6 weeks later, I'm sitting in Mark's office, telling him my story, telling him where I've come from, where I am right now in all of this. And what I was explaining to him is the parable of the prodigal son, I really identify with that. I really understand that. I know there was rejoicing in heaven when I came back. I prayed the night that I met with Monsignor after I got home. And I know there was rejoicing in heaven. And I said, but at some point, if you think about the story, the party ends. And the household all goes back to its normal buzz of activity. And the prodigal son's been away for a while. And doesn't really just slide back into place. It's weird. I said, I'm right about there. I don't know what to do. And Mark said, well, because we had talked for quite a while about my background. He said, you could join RCIA. Do you know what that is? I said, well, I do. I'm aware of RCIA, but didn't that start back in September? And he said, well, yeah, it did. But you're supposed to be there at the beginning. He said, well, you are, but sometimes we make exceptions. And it's clear that God's working in your life. It's clear that he is. So sometimes we make exceptions, and people do start late, and that's okay. So you could join RCIA. And I said, no. It started in September. And he said, well, it did, but what we've done so far, we've gone through salvation history, this, that, and the other. He said, with your background, while it's always great to review, you probably know more than most of the people who just came through the past 6-8 weeks of RCIA. But if you're going to join, it needs to be now, because we're going to start talking about sacraments and all sorts of other things soon, so you could join RCIA. Now, I am desperately clinging to some control over my life. I went from nothing to emailing a priest, to going to Mass every Sunday, to going to Catholicism 101, to meeting with the director of evangelization and catechesis, and I didn't even know what the word catechesis meant. And he's trying to get me to do more things. I was so happy that it started September. I was going to have to wait because I would regain some control of my life. No. So he said, I said, but it started in September. That's how it's supposed to work. He said, yes, Karen, that is how it's supposed to work. But sometimes the Holy Spirit doesn't follow our schedule. And outwardly, that shut me up. And inwardly, I stomped my foot and said, but he should. And next thing we know, I'm in RCIA. I give Mark grief about how he, like, made me join RCIA. And he is very clear that he never forced me to do anything. And I said, yeah, you spoke truth to me and I recognized it. And he said, that's your problem. Okay, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. So I went through RCIA, and I came into the church, and it was an extraordinarily beautiful day. I just had this image of walking into a palace. Think about Beauty and the Beast, the scene near the end with the dancing, with the big ballroom scene. I felt like I was walking into that as I received, as I was confirmed, as I received communion. I felt like that's what I was walking into, that I was a princess being brought from outside where it was cold into something so, so beautiful. And it was a beautiful day. That first summer, we had a study group of some sort for newly minted RCIA people, and I was part of that, and we read a series of different articles. I don't remember them except for one small piece. One of the articles that we read, and I don't remember any of the context surrounding it, talked about giving your life completely to God. And I remember thinking, I don't know what that means. I know what that meant for Abraham. I know what that meant for St. Peter. I know what that means for Monsignor Holmes. I have no idea what that means for me. So the next week, as we had this group, I brought up the question. And I was given an answer that I'm sure was an excellent answer. I'm certain it must have been an excellent answer, and it didn't mean a thing in the world to me. And I just put that on the back burner. But it sort of sat there and simmered on the back burner for a couple of years, a few years. Sometime in those few years, I started going to spiritual direction. Got my prayer life put in order. Got all sorts of things put in order. And at some point, a couple of years, another year or two later, this conversation, this piece that I had read about giving your life completely to God sort of came back up. And I really didn't know why, but it just started coming back up in my mind. And I kept saying, but I don't know what this is. I said, well, I'm going to pray. And I started to pray every day, or very nearly, God, I want to give my life to you completely. I said, God, I don't even know what that means. I don't know what I'm asking for. But I really believe that this is an important thing to ask for. I really believe that this is the right thing to ask for. And even though I don't understand what I'm saying, I am going to continue to ask for this. I don't think I put an end date on this, but I am going to continue to ask for this. And I prayed for, I don't know, about a year and a half or so. And then one day, I was talking with Mark, and kind of out of the blue, he asked me, so what are your thoughts about marriage, Karen? I'm like, What? It's an odd question to be asked, especially by a married man. And I thought back to that prayer 18, pushing 20 years earlier at this point, where I said, God, please protect me. Please protect me from any romantic interest. And the fact that I had been. I actually, when I was in RCIA near the end, it crossed my mind, wait a minute. I asked God to protect me until I was back in a right relationship with him. I am about to be back in a right relationship with God. Oh dear. Okay. I've been to all sorts of weddings and people always seem really, really happy. So I'm sure it's a good thing. I can't imagine saying those words to another person, but maybe I just haven't met the right person. I really expected to be married within a year or so of coming into the church. I don't think it's something I wanted, but I all but expected it. So Mark's suddenly asking me, what are your thoughts about marriage? He said, marriage, what do you think? He said, marriage is a beautiful and wonderful thing for other people. And they said, okay. So it's totally off the table? I said, oh, you need to be so careful before you tell God something is totally off the table. That's dangerous. That's dangerous ground. I said, however, I am not interested. I have not been for a very long time. No. And he said, okay, that's what I thought. Do you know anything about consecrated virginity? And I said, no, I've never heard of it. What are you talking about? And he said, okay. And he told me a brief little bit about it. I'll tell you more in a few minutes. He said, I went to this talk about vocations a couple of months ago. Priesthood, religious life, marriage. He said, as soon as they started talking about consecrated virginity, I immediately thought about you. And I keep thinking about it. You need to look into this. Okay, that was a Tuesday. So Wednesday, I did my homework. I Googled consecrated virginity. And, I mean, very good websites come up when you do that. It's unheard of enough that there's not that much weird stuff out there. I mean, I'm sure there is if I went looking. But the stuff that comes up first is good stuff. And I read about it. So a little bit of background for you. Consecrated virginity is, it's older than any of the religious orders. It dates back to approximately apostolic times, and it would be women who would give their lives completely to God. It would be women who would forsake marriage, who would marry God, would say, no, I can't marry you, I already am married. It would be women who would live outwardly a normal life, but inwardly have their life dedicated to God at a very personal level. So I'm reading about this, and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? This is way more serious than I am. And I wrote him back a note, you're out of your mind. What were you thinking? But I knew that I couldn't just ignore this. I knew this was going to be important. So I went on my calendar, flipped the calendar ahead. This was September. I flipped the calendar ahead to January and wrote down, ask Mark about consecrated virginity. Because then I'm pushing it aside. I'm giving myself a little space because I like control. This is going to come back again. I like to be in control. I'm pushing it aside, but I'm not rejecting it completely. It's going to come back. And I just get a little bit of chance to get used to whatever this is that I don't understand. So that was Wednesday. Thursday, my life went into, let's just simplify it down, my life went into a little bit of a tailspin. One of those tailspins where you cry a countable number of tears. Not lots and lots. Your whole life doesn't, like, get destroyed. But it's enough to make you cry. And on Friday, I was so angry with God. And I was saying, okay, I keep offering to give my life to you. I'm dense sometimes. I keep offering to give my life to you. I've been asking you this for a year and a half. And this is how you treat me. I'm really feeling hurt. I'm really, really feeling hurt right now. And I went to bed very sad. And I woke up Saturday morning and kind of like bolted awake and said, wait a minute. What was that thing I was supposed to look into? I had so put it out of my mind, I couldn't remember what it was called. And I had forgotten I'd put it on my calendar. So I had to go through the search history on my computer to find out what this was that I had looked up. And I reread the same documents. And my eyes just got bigger and bigger. And I said, oh my goodness. This is what I've been praying for a year and a half and didn't even know existed. I had no idea this was even here. So I spent the next week, 2 weeks, reading, learning some about this, just to give you a little more information. Yes, it is very much a marriage, a complete giving of self to God. Consecrated virginity. Virginity is a part of what this is. It's required. I'm giving myself completely back to God. So we are all born as virgins. Most people give their virginity to someone else, ideally on their wedding night, but sometimes not. I gave mine back to God. So it is, I have made a promise of celibacy, which it's interesting as I look around, a couple of you cringed. But celibacy is beautiful. Let me tell you why celibacy is beautiful. Celibacy is beautiful for the same reason that monogamy is beautiful. Up until midway through this whole process, I had always thought of celibacy as an absence of. But it's not. It's not an absence of any more than monogamy is an absence of. So someone who is married and is faithful to their husband or to their wife is giving up all other people because they want to be faithful to this one person, and because that is the most beautiful thing to them. And they can give themselves completely as a complete gift to this other person by turning away from all others. And with me, it's the same way with God. I can give myself to God completely through my celibacy. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. As I said, very much like monogamy is. So I'm reading, I'm learning some about this. It's a threefold calling: virgin, bride, and mother. So virgin we've talked about, but bride is the bride of Christ. You're going to see some pictures in a few minutes of the ceremony. It's very much a wedding ceremony. Wear a white dress, wear a ring. It's very much a wedding. With all the joy that comes with a wedding. And then mother. Clearly, I will never physically be a mother. But I'm still expected to have that type of a role. I have that in my teaching. Something just a week or two before my consecration, it was so touching. One of my students, just out of the blue, so I teach high school, mostly juniors and seniors. My kids are like 17 years old. 17 is my favorite age. I love 17-year-olds. Teaching my 17-year-olds, and out of the blue, right in the middle of class, one of my students said, Miss Paschke, you don't have kids, do you? Said, no. You are the most maternal person I have ever met. How is that possible? And sort of what rolled off my tongue was, I had a really great mom, have a really great mom as a role model. I did call her up that evening and told her about that. She was touched. I said, but I thought to myself, oh my goodness, what a confirmation of this calling of virgin bride and mother. I can be mother to all these 17-year-olds. It's great. Anyway, about 2 weeks later, I am sitting in Father John's office, spiritual direction, and he says, "So, anything new in your life?" I'm like, "Well, you know, since you asked." And I tell him about my conversation with Mark. He knew about the prayer, "I want to give my life to you completely." We had talked about that over the time. I told him about what I'd learned online. I told him about kind of this whole experience that I'd had and popping awake that one morning, saying, "Oh my goodness, what was this?" And I talked for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes. I have never had anyone's attention like I had his attention for those 10 minutes. He was on the edge of his seat. Generally, there's an uh-huh and a mm-hmm and, "Well, have you considered..." That reminds me of the story back when I was in Indiana when it, stuff gets interjected. Not one sound. It was almost like he was afraid to break some spell. Not one sound out of him. And finally, I'm like, "Okay, Father, I've been talking for a really, really long time now. What do you think?" At which point he just broke out in this ridiculous ear-to-ear grin and just sat there grinning at me. I'm like, "Okay, words, spit them out. What do you think?" He's got the grin, a little bit of it, not quite. There it goes. So he just looked at me and said, "I have been waiting for 2 years for you to come to me with this." "What?" He said, "It took me about 6 months to really get to know you, to understand where God was calling you, how far you would be willing to say yes to. I pegged you for consecrated virginity 2 years ago." I'm like, "Why didn't you say anything?" He said, I can't. Something like this cannot come from me to you. It has to come from you to me. So I've just had to sit back and wait and pray. But now that we're here, we talked for 4.5 hours that night. And he was out in Lancaster at the time. I still had a 2-hour drive to get home. I was so tired. But I was so happy. Good friend of mine, some of you may know him, Steve Bruner, now Deacon Steve Bruner. He was in seminary, real early in seminary at the time. And I emailed him. We were buddies. I emailed him. I said, "Steve, there's something big going on." I said, Don't worry at all. There's no cause for concern, but there's something really big going on. Would you please pray for me? I'm happy to talk to you about it, but I would rather do this in person rather than by email. So you're going to be home at Christmas time, right? Let's get together and talk. But in the meantime, please, I'm begging you, would you please pray for me? An email back, "Sure, I'd be happy to pray for you." And Christmas time, we sat down over cups of hot chocolate. I said, "So what's going on, Karen?" I said, "Well, since September, I've been discerning consecrated virginity." And he said, "Yeah, that's what I thought." "What?" He said, "Well, you sent me that email back a month ago or whatever it was, and I sat and I thought about it for a minute or two, and I figured that this is what you were asking for prayers about. It just seemed right. So this is what I've been praying for, and I figured if it was wrong, God would fix the prayer." And he said this little flick of his hand, and I'm like, "I'll be taken care of, I'll be good." There's a pause while I pick my jaw up off the floor. And then he said, "Oh, by the way, I read this really great book. You should read it too. That's the book that talked about celibacy and tying that with monogamy." Rocked my world, essentially, that book did. So, I'm telling this as if it's all beautiful and wonderful and roses. I freaked out many times along the way. I panicked. I said, "Oh my gosh, this is way too big. I'm coming too close. I'm not worthy of this," which I assure you I'm not. there's no way. There's no way. But I kept being called back. I kept being drawn back. I kept being drawn back by love. By an absolute, complete love that was just magnetic and just pulling me, this warmth, pulling me into God. So, kept coming closer. I met with a mentor, a woman here in the diocese who is already a consecrated virgin. I met with her regularly. The application process took me 7 months to complete, but it was really a very good process. It helped me. It didn't feel like prove that you're worthy. It felt more like, let's make sure that you both understand what this vocation is and understand who you are so that you know if this is a good fit. I kind of got the impression that yes, they could say yes or no, but really it came down to me. And yeah, they would have said no if they thought no, but a lot of it came down to me. I had to write an essay, for lack of a better term, basically describing who are you in the presence of God. Sit down and try to put that into words sometime. Sit down and try to put that into words. And I was able to. Took me 7 months, but I was able to. And I grew to know myself. I grew to know my relationship with God. I grew closer to God through this whole time. Bless you. So it was a very, very beautiful process. This, as I said, the ceremony itself. Oh, the day that I found out that my application had been accepted, I went to adoration and I prayed. And the very first words out of my mouth, the very first thing that I could think of to say was, "My soul magnifies the Lord." That was all I could think of to say. So it was, the ceremony itself, as I said, was very much like a wedding, white dress, the whole bit. I used a wedding website to help me plan the whole thing. It was funny, some parts of it were very, very helpful, some parts of it didn't quite apply. Have conversations with your future in-laws about this, that, and the other. I'm like, okay, Mary and Joseph, they seem okay with this. My very favorite one that I got to just check off immediately: determine groom's attire. Like, okay, God, you can wear anything you want. I am not micromanaging that one. I'm not going there. So anyway, it was a beautiful, beautiful day. I had about 150 people who came. I had family who came from all over the country. My best friend lives an hour and a half north of London. That's part of the reason there's so many European countries on that introduction list, because she has three small children, so it's much easier for me to go visit her in Europe than for her to come to me. But she came over for a weekend to come to my consecration. I had friends and family from near and far. It was just another beautiful day, so wildly in love with God. And as I had said, I had been to so many weddings, and I couldn't imagine saying the words that brides say to a man. But to God, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. It was a beautiful, beautiful day. Going into it, I think I was remembering back to this Beauty and the Beast palace sort of image that I had in my mind. I think I imagined something more like a Cinderella story, which really is very appropriate. Little me and God, my prince. But it was so much more solemn than that. in a very beautiful way, so much more solemn and important than I had expected even going in, even though I was as prepared for it as I could have been. Very beautiful, very solemn, very in love with God. So, one would think that that's enough excitement for the month of February. Nope. Oh, I sent you the old one.
Sorry.
Oh, well. So, there were two versions of the PowerPoint, and you got the former version, not the most up-to-date, but that's okay. That's okay. This is fine. 16 days later, I was hospitalized. I hadn't been feeling well. I just figured I was tired from the consecration and the school year and everything else. And I finally went to the doctor because I just really wasn't well. And I figured I would be told, well, you've got a bit of a virus. You'll be fine. Go home, rest. I was immediately hospitalized. Diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell double-hit lymphoma, which is, well, it's a little rough. It is the second fastest growing kind of lymphoma. Lymphoma is cancer of the lymph system. Basically, my immune system got cancer. When I was hospitalized, my largest tumor was approximately the size of a softball. I had countless other smaller ones. It had metastasized onto my liver. They are estimating that I went from first cell mutation to that in 3 weeks. It was a hyper-aggressive cancer, very, very aggressive cancer. So I was freaked out. I was upset. I was really upset, and justifiably so. And then my first morning in the hospital, I was praying morning prayer, which I had been praying every day for about 2 years up until that point. But the Canticle of Zechariah is a part of morning prayer. And this is the end of it. In the tender compassion of our God, the dawn from on high shall break upon us and shine on those who dwell in darkness and the shadow of death, and to guide our feet in the way of peace. And I read those words, and they jumped off the page at me in a way that never had they before. As I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm here in the shadow of death. Because at that point, with something that aggressive, it wasn't looking good. It was not looking good. I'm here in the shadow of death. But there's the tender compassion of God's love. There's the tender compassion from on high, just this light breaking upon me. And I was lying there in a room waiting for a test that was going to be run, and everything was delayed, so I'm just lying in this room by myself for a couple of hours, just waiting, and this just keeps going through my head. The tender compassion of God, the dawn from on high breaking upon me, shining over the shadow of death, and guiding my feet in the way of peace. And I was very, very calm at that moment. I'd freaked out plenty of other times, but I was very, very calm right then. A friend of mine came and stopped by at the hospital, walked in, sat down. His first words to me were not, hello. His first words to me were not, how are you feeling? I mean, the expected sorts of things. He sat down in a chair, he opened his mouth, and he said, wow, God must really love you. And I looked at him like he was out of his mind. It's funny, because it was just a couple of weeks ago I was talking with him, and he mentioned to me, I had no idea that's what I was going to say. I didn't come up the elevator at the hospital sort of planning out what I was going to say. I was planning on saying, hello, how are you feeling? And that's what just came out of my mouth. So I'm like, okay, God needed me to know that. Needed me to know, wow, he really loves me. Another friend of mine came and visited me. And she looked at me and said, well, this is your honeymoon. My what? Well, it's your honeymoon. I'm like, no. Other people go snorkeling on their honeymoons. I want to snorkel. And she just looked at me, you married the wrong guy. You don't get to snorkel. She said, Karen, your life is so busy. You never slow down. And now you have to. It's not that you don't want to slow down. You don't know how. But now you have to slow down. God wanted some time with you. This is your honeymoon. I also looked at her like she was nuts. I believe justifiably so. Although it turns out, both cases, I have wise friends. I need to keep wise friends around me because I'm not always as wise as I need to be. I have wise friends. Father John told me, I want you to read the book of Job. Okay. I didn't remember Job being as long as it is. It's 42 chapters long, but I was in the hospital for 11 days. I can read the book of Job. And I had two big takeaways from the book of Job at the time. Big takeaway number one. When everything happens to Job, Job's response is God gives and God takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Mrs. Job's response is curse God and die. And I thought to myself, okay, that's a continuum. Those are the end points of a continuum. I need to know where I am on that continuum. And I need to keep track of where I am and sort of gauge how I'm doing spiritually by where I am on that continuum. And I will admit to you, I was on every single point of that continuum at some point in those next couple of weeks, from the very top to the very bottom. Yes, I went to confession. I was at every point on that continuum at some point or another. But fairly quickly, I stabilized to about the 2/3 of the way up mark. Not quite where Job was, but way, way, way above where Mrs. Job was. And I pretty much stabilized there and stayed there. I panicked every now and then, but stayed there for the most part. The second big thing that I learned, Job eventually called God to the carpet and demanded, you know I'm righteous. Seriously, what gives? And that did not go well for Job. Job pretty well got smacked down by that, by God at that one. And my takeaway from that is, okay, I won't ask why. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going there. I will not ask why. Nothing good comes from that. I'm not going there. That's a question above my pay grade. And I really haven't. And I think the whole process went much more easily for me because of that. I asked my doctors why, but that's a completely different question. They had absolutely no answer for me. But asking them medically why did this happen is a completely different answer from asking God, demanding of God, you know I'm righteous, I'm your bride, why did this happen to me? Totally different kind of question. So I thought about it for a little while, lots of time in the hospital, I think. Thought about it for a while. And next time I saw Father John, I said, I've got some goals. When I come out the other side of this, which I will, when I come out the other side of this, I want to be a better person. I want to be a better child of God. I want to be more compassionate. I had this grand list. And he signs, yeah, that's nice. This is good stuff. What do you mean? Yeah, that's nice. This is good stuff. And he said, I just don't want you to limit God in all of the things that you're going to learn and in all the ways that you can grow from this experience. I don't want you to be limited. said, is there more? He said, oh yes, there's more. Will you tell me what it is? No. Okay, okay. It's kind of funny because a few weeks later, I'm talking to him again, and I'm like, okay, here's the problem. Here's the problem. I said I want to grow in all these different ways, and you thought that was nice, but there'd be even more ways. I'm like halfway through treatment, and I don't seem to be making appropriate progress in all of this. I'm not on schedule. I said, it's going to be at least 20 years before you've learned all the things you're going to learn from this experience and grow in all of the different ways you're going to grow. Really? Yeah. Okay. So what are some of the first things I learned that weren't on my list? I learned how much I'm loved. Most people find out how much they're loved at their funeral. I had the privilege of finding out much earlier how much I'm loved. 150 people came to my consecration, as I said. And then 16 days later, when I was diagnosed with cancer, the outpouring of love for me was amazing. I had so many people offering to help. Can I bring you food? Can I take you for a walk? What can I do? How can I help you? I just had this amazing outpouring of love. I had people I didn't know come up to me and say, I've been praying for you. I had people come up on the street to me and say, I've been praying for you. You're that person from church. I've been praying for you. I'm like, who are you? I will never know this side of heaven how many people have prayed for me. And I am so thankful and humbled at that thought. I am loved. I am loved amazingly, by both God and people. That was the first thing I learned. I learned that I'm not in control. I've tried desperately for a long time to hang on to control, and I still try. But I was taught very, very clearly, I am not in control of this one. Not at all. Not even sort of. No, I am not in control. God is in control. And everything is better when I learn to accept that and even embrace that. My cancer treatment, because I had this crazy long cancer with this big long name, I had crazy treatment. Most people go in once every 3 weeks. It's fairly typical, but different treatments are different. Every 3 weeks, and they sit in the hospital for like 5 hours, and they get stuff pumped into them. No. That would have been too simple. I had 100-hour infusions of chemo. I had to wear a backpack for a week at a time with a pump and a couple liters of chemo and walk around with this thing tethered to me. I had to hang it on my bedpost while I slept and make sure I didn't roll in the same direction too many times in a row. I could set it down next to me if I was seated, but I had to carry it everywhere. So I had chemo week, I had sick week, and I had healthy week. And Holy Week was sick week. And I love Holy Week. I love going to, every single one of the liturgies. I'll go through all the way through. And I couldn't leave my couch. And I was curled up on my couch. And I remember Good Friday, I watched it on TV, because it was the best I could do. I couldn't get there. I physically couldn't have gotten the two-thirds of a block to get there. I couldn't have done it. But I curled up on my couch, and I watched it. And at my consecration, Father Grant gave me a crucifix that he had gotten in Jerusalem. And I went and I got that, and I just held that during all of the Good Friday service that I was watching on TV. And when everyone else went up to reverence the cross, I had mine. I didn't move much further than this because I couldn't, but I had mine with me. And I remember I noticed Simon of Cyrene I really noticed him that time. He was minding his own business, going along, somewhere to be, and all of a sudden he gets pulled into carrying this cross. And it's heavy, and it's messy, and it's hard, and it's publicly humiliating that he has to do this. And I'm sure it messed with his schedule. I'm sure he had somewhere he was supposed to be. And he couldn't go where he was supposed to be because now he had to do this. And it turns out that that was the single most important thing he ever did. The greatest privilege he ever had. He's named in the Bible. His sons are named in the Bible. Had he not carried that cross, we'd never know him. It was the greatest gift he ever gave to God. And I thought about my cancer, and I'm like, okay, it's hard, and it's heavy, and I've lost my hair, my pretty, pretty hair. I had beautiful hair. I've lost my pretty, pretty hair, and it's publicly humiliating, and I'm out of work, and I'm not supposed to be here on my couch. I'm supposed to be at church right now. This is messing with my schedule. Will I ever consider this to be the greatest thing in my life, the most influential thing in my life, the greatest gift I could ever give to God? I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. I can imagine that I will be there. I've been saying for about a year, I can imagine I'll be there soon. But I said I was just going to run from God for a year, and it turned out to be 15. So I don't know what soon means. I don't know what soon means. I had one day I was walking. This was during chemo week. I felt very, very good during chemo week itself. It was the week after that I crashed. I was walking along. I can tell you what square of the sidewalk I was on. I stopped short, and I said, "Oh my goodness, I am so filled with joy. I am so happy. I'm carrying my backpack filled with chemo." But I realized how absolutely joyful I was at that moment. I'm like, there is no earthly explanation for my joy. I can't really eat much. I'm carrying this chemo. I mean, yes, my cancer treatments at this point is looking like things are going well, but it might not. My pretty hair is gone. Why am I so joyful? Because the only thing I had at that point was God and friends and family and love. I only had the best things. None of it was diluted by all of the lower forms of happiness. I only had that top level. There was nothing else there for me. And it was so filled with joy. And then the cancer died. A merciless death, all of it, it's gone. I will not be considered cured, medically cured, until I hit the 5-year mark. I'm coming up, I'm about a year and a half since I finished treatment. Maybe not quite. But at this point, I have a less than 1% chance of it coming back. And thanks be to God. Thank you. And what I keep telling people is I am healthier. I am in better physical shape, and I am happier than I was pre-cancer. I always add on, I don't recommend the method. I don't recommend it. Don't do it. However, that's where I am. So the comment of, wow, God really loves you? Yes. Yes, he does. And I said that I would not ask why. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. However, I've gotten some answers from God. He's chosen to reveal things to me just because he loves me. I was sitting in Mass one day, and the raising of Lazarus was the reading. And I'm listening to this being read, And when Jesus is first told that Lazarus is very ill, please come right away, he's very ill, Jesus' response is, this illness is not to end in death, but is for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified through it. And I sat there and I thought about that, and I said, wait a minute. Was the whole purpose of my illness for the glory of God, somehow, in a way that I may never on this earth understand? Is that even possible? I'm like, yeah, it is in fact possible. If that's the case, I accept. I accept. Will I ever fully know why? Probably not on this earth. But that just jumped off the page at me. About the time that this jumped off the page at me, I started to pray. It was spontaneous, and it's become part of my pre-Mass prayer every day. My prayer was, or is, started off as, God, I gave my life to you completely, and it looked like you were going to keep it. But now you've given it back to me, and there must be some reason. There must be some reason I'm alive. You must have a plan for me. When you're ready to tell me what it is, I'm listening. No idea if I'll pray that till tomorrow or for decades. But that's my prayer. And somewhere along the way, it occurred to me, a couple of things occurred to me. First of all, wait. I offered my life to God, but he accepted it. And to me, that's just amazing. I mean, yes, okay, my sad little life, I offered to God. He wanted it, which is such a privilege that he wanted my life. That when I said, here's my life, he said, okay, yes, I do want that. When I said, God, I want to give my life to you completely, he said, yes. It's quite a privilege. And the second thing that occurred to me is whenever we give something to God and he gives it back, it's always better. The little kid, I mean, we don't laugh hard enough at this story. We should. The little kid with the 5 loaves and 2 fish, who's naive enough to say, well, here's my lunch. Will this help? No, it's not going to help. Go away, kid. And yet, it did. And I truly believe that not only did the 5 loaves and 2 fish become quantitatively better, I truly believe they became qualitatively better. I truly believe that the bread and fish that Jesus gave out to the crowds was a higher quality than what he was given. It's got to be. It's just got to be. The example par excellence is the Eucharist. We give God bread, and really not very good bread, and wine. And he gives us the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ in exchange. I gave God my life. He's given it back to me. Is it better? Yes. Will it be better in more ways? Probably. Will I ever know the full of it? Probably not. But when you give something to God and he gives it back, it's better. Just a couple of weeks ago, Job was the reading at weekday Mass. And this is the very end of Job. Near the very end. After he got smacked down. I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be hindered. This is Job speaking to God. I have dealt with great things that I do not understand. Things too wonderful for me, which I cannot know. I have heard of you by word of mouth. But now my eye has seen you. And this is very much my experience. I have dealt with things far too wonderful for me, far too big for me. And I have drawn closer to God. I knew of God before, but I know God better now because of the experience that I've been through. 11 months to the day after I was hospitalized, with initially hospitalized with cancer. There were multiple hospitalizations. But 11 months to the day after the first one, exactly 2 weeks before my one-year mark of consecration, I was walking home from Mass, and I slipped on some ice. Shattered my radius, broke my ulna into 3 pieces, dislocated my wrist. Anniversary gift? Maybe. What have I learned from this? I have no words of wisdom for you on this one. I have none. I got nothing. Maybe in 20 years I'll have something. I got nothing on this one.